Thank you all for your attendance today. Chief Staff Carrie Nikolajewski, call to order, please.
Chair Perkins.
Here.
Vice Chair Arascada.
Here.
Regent Boylan.
Here.
Regent Carter. Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you much. As co-chair today, in the absence of Regent Perkins, although she is joining us on the telephone, I will be facilitating today's meeting. And with that, let's start up in Elko. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you, Elko. Is there a public comment in Las Vegas?
There is none.
And there is in Reno, please.
Amy Payson, Chair of the Faculty Senate at UNR, speaking on behalf of the Faculty Senate at UNR. At the March meeting, there was presented the NSHE anti-discrimination resolution with an understanding that that resolution would go through some revisions and be brought back to a future board meeting. I know that on this agenda, the chair will give an update about where that resolution stands, but I wanted to share with you all that the Faculty Senate at UNR has created a resolution in relation to this anti-discrimination resolution. Our resolution can be found on our website and was also sent to all of the regents. I'll just read a portion of that so that you can hear where the faculty at UNR stand in relation to this anti-discrimination resolution. Whereas the Faculty Senate has affirmed its own commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion in resolutions responding to incidences of hate and bias in 2017 and again in 2019. And whereas those Faculty Senate resolutions, the Senate affirmed the importance of diversity to our educational mission, as well as the important role faculty have in fostering a welcoming, inclusive, equitable, and safe environment for all to learn and reach their potential. And whereas the 2019 Faculty Senate resolution, the Senate affirmed that the core values of diversity and equity be thoroughly integrated into the curriculum and institutional culture. Therefore, be it resolved that the University Faculty Senate strongly encourages the Board of Regents to approve the anti-discrimination resolution at a future meeting and to finalize a system-wide equity statement. And be it further resolved that the University Faculty Senate will continue to hold itself and leaders of the institution and system accountable to fostering diversity, equity, inclusion, and access for all members of our higher education community. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Payson, and thank you for disseminating that information to all of us. Is there any further public comment in Reno? Thank you. We're going to move on to number three, the chair's report once again. Chair Perkins is unable. Oh, excuse me, I apologize, jumping ahead. Item number two for possible action. The committee will consider approval of minutes from the December 3rd meeting. Is there a motion on the table?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Thank you, Ms. McMichael. Is there a second?
Second, Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. All in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Let's go to number three, please, as I was jumping ahead. Number three, as we just previously heard in regards to the chair's report and the anti-discrimination resolution. This will be addressed collaboratively with students, faculty, staff, and the entire external community. In order to have full input from all stakeholders, and will be addressed for a future meeting. This anti-discrimination statement is imperative to the well-being and stature of this institute, in addition to the entire NSHE staff. So therefore, we will address this after further collaboration. All right. Number four, with the ADA Plan Review Committee, University of Nevada, Reno, President Sandoval, I leave it to you.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Perkins, Vice Chair Scott, members of the Board of Regents, and
honored guests. For the record, Brian Sandoval, president of the University of Nevada, Reno. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss a topic that is one of the primary capital priorities of my administration. As I've mentioned to many of you, accessibility has my focus and remains my top and only priority for the prospective additional deferred maintenance funds that NSHE is requesting of the state. That is to address physical accessibility needs on our campus. In preparing that capital request, several of you have asked about the mechanics we would use deploying those funds to be most impactful, and I appreciate being here today to present our on-campus process for engaging stakeholders to bring projects to completion. So with your permission, Vice Chair Ariscott, I'd like to ask a colleague who's just as passionate and committed as I am to this area, the university's Associate Vice President of Facilities Services, Denise Baklowski, to present some of the good work her and her team are doing. So with that, and your permission, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Please, thank you.
Sorry. Regent Ariscotta, committee members, thank you for inviting me. I am Denise Baklowski. I'm the Associate Vice President for Facility Services at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm here today to share with you our efforts towards improving our designs and construction facilities for everyone. Specifically, I want to talk about the ADA Plan Review Committee and our efforts through that group to provide an additional plan review service on each design. Thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of the committee, its purpose and charge, current membership, the plan review process that we follow. I want to touch on our transition plan priorities, which help us to remove barriers on campus, and then highlight a couple of accomplishments that we've seen. So the ADA Plan Review Committee was spawned after the Great Basin Hall opening in 2018. So this state-of-the-art residence hall opened, beautiful facility, it meets code. But I learned very quickly after it opened that the entrance specifically is not very inclusive, certainly not welcoming, not very functional. So if you see the slide, the one on the left-hand side, I don't know if you're able to see the ramp. The ramp is way to the side, feels sort of like a secondary back-of-house entrance, not integral to the opening of the building. Then as you approach the entrance to the building, it's not readily apparent if there's a door actuator, and if so, where is it? And in these slides, you'll see that it's kind of tucked in behind the opening of the building, forcing the user to go around the building, hit the actuator, come back around to the entrance. So clearly not very functional. From that, I engaged the Disability Resource Center and past chair, Mary Zabel, and asked her for assistance in reviewing our plans so that we could make sure that they not only met code, but also were more usable to all users. We then formed the committee, staffed mostly by DRC members and some transitory folks that would come and go as we reviewed plans. Since 2018, for the following 3 years, we had 27 sets of plans reviewed through 26 meetings. In late fall last year, and through great encouragement and support from Regent Ariscotta, we decided it was time to expand the membership of this committee to all the stakeholders on campus who have an interest in making sure that our designs are accessible, welcoming, and inclusion. And so from there, as you can see from the board, we included major stakeholders, faculty, staff, students, members of the public, and others. So the purpose of the committee then is not for the committee members to have a thorough understanding of building codes, but more be thoughtful and provide us the input that we need to make our plans welcoming and useful. We also tasked this committee with reviewing our annual efforts towards removing barriers. We have a transition plan, and in that transition plan, we have a lot of priorities. So this group helps us pinpoint those priorities that will achieve the greatest benefit to the most number of people. The current membership is the committee is chaired by Shane Carter. He's the interim director of the Disability Resource Center, and he is here today. Scott Brown, who's the chief of design and facility services, he's also here today. And then we have student representation, faculty, staff, Nevada's Excellence in Disabilities, and then a community member at large. The members, we ask them to serve for a two-year commitment, and then we have about half the team rotate off each year just to allow for some continuity. The process, we have a standing every other Thursday meeting, so it's a big commitment on the part of the committee. We do that to facilitate the construction schedule so that we can make sure we have something on the books when we need it for the review. And we hold, I would say, maybe 70% of those meetings over time as construction proceeds through its process. Committee members provide feedback and input. The design team then incorporates that input into the design to improve the product. Small remodels will typically be seen at about the 50 to 75% completion of design phase, still plenty of time to make changes if necessary. Our large new facility additions, major renovations, we see them twice, once at the end of the design development, which is about two-thirds through the process, and then again during construction document phase, just to make sure that we've captured the input that we've received. Switching gears for a moment to the transition plan, the Department of Justice provides us with a priority matrix on items in our transition plan. So we're required to do a self-study, identify all the barriers that exist on campus, a lot of them from, prior to the ADA standards being developed. And from then, we have a transition plan where we list every barrier and we allocate funds each year to remove as many as we can. We have a lot of barriers on a campus like this that's this old and with the geographic configuration of it. And there's a lot of priority ones, priority twos, priority threes, which are typically the ones that people would like to have done sooner than later. So the committee will look at those priorities and provide us with the first, second, third most important ones that should get done in any given year. Currently, we're working on improvements to the West Stadium parking garage, which obviously serves a lot of people who visit the campus and park in that garage. We're also installing a new ramp to serve the Lombardi-Lawler area, and just broke ground on construction to add a ramp from sort of the upper part of campus by Leafs and Physics to the lower part of campus by Raggio. So these are things that will clearly improve access for everyone. We've had a couple of accomplishments since this new committee was formed. I have to say, I've been on campus a long time. I've formed a lot of committees, and this one came together with a huge number of people super quickly. I made the ask in December. By January, I had a committee formed. Early February was the kickoff meeting. Since the agenda deadline for this meeting, 5 meetings had been held, 6 plans were reviewed. And at the very first meeting, we made an adjustment to our university design and construction standards by changing the layout of our ADA-compliant restrooms. So the picture on the left shows our typical layouts, perfectly acceptable in terms of code, but the one on the right really accommodates larger chairs, electric chairs, much better. And so this was something we clearly didn't know, and now we do. So all of our new ADA restrooms that we install will use the configuration on the right. Other accomplishments, we now include automatic door actuators on all exterior doors. That's not a requirement, but it's clearly more convenient. Our interior door operators now are all full length. Those are much easier to use. As I mentioned, the ADA restroom orientation is different, and then we've also improved the layout of our van accessible spaces in our new parking lots or modified parking lots. I think in addition, we just have a lot more buy-in and maybe knowledge and understanding about how construction works and plan reviews, and with the more collaborative input from all the various stakeholders on campus, I think it's really improved our process a lot. So with that, I am happy to entertain questions, and I know The chair of the ADA committee, Shane Carter, is here as well if you have questions for him.
Thank you, Denise. Any questions from the committee?
Yes, sir.
Regent Boylan?
Yes. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I thank the lady who's just done the presentation. And I have a few concerns. I see that there's a lot of meetings and a lot of plans. How long does it take to get one simple thing done? If I'm right, there was something you started in 2018, and it hasn't been completed yet or something with the first pictures of the ramp on the front door. It's interesting that it takes so long to get major things for handicapped personnel. It's in the private industry, like a lot of us and a lot of people like to say, in the private industry. I don't think those would take more than a few weeks or a couple of months. But from what I'm getting from you is something started in 2018, and then Regent Ariscada also got after it. And is that completed, ma'am? It was about the door and the ramp and all that stuff.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, for your question. And maybe I misspoke when I used that as an example of why we needed a plan review committee, but we have not undergone an attempt to make modifications to that facility. We have very limited funding, and we are now trying to focus our efforts on items that are clearly out of compliance and are not accessible. That facility is accessible. What we learned from it is it's just not laid out very well, and that from now on we should lay them out a lot better.
I see. And why hasn't it taken people, why has it taken people so long to see all these problems that affect people in wheelchairs or on crutches? Why wasn't all this done before? We've been around forever, haven't we?
Thank you for the question. It is a very
yes, ma'am.
Long and complex history of the ADA, and we have attempted to the best of our ability to make sure that all new construction and renovations meet the standard. But there are a lot of things that were constructed prior to the standards being implemented. And those are on this transition plan. And with limited funding, we address those every year. So as an example, right now, I allocate about $350,000 per year to address ADA barriers that we're aware of on our transition plan. And we knock those out one at a time as we go through. Any renovation that we take on is in addition to that, so not included in that $350,000 part. And it will take us a long time to make this campus 100% accessible.
So is that just based on lack of funding?
Funding is a huge part of the equation, yes.
Okay, and is there any way... I was going to say something, but President Sandoval could help with that and help in funding. Or I'm not very good at funding, so can we not find some funds with all the millions that we talk about in our budget all the time? Is that possible? If it's just funding, or is it just that you have too many committees and too many meetings. Let's see some action. So if it's funding, who would help us with that?
Yeah. Regent Ariscada, or Vice Chair Ariscada, to you and through you to Regent Boylan. And Regent Boylan, thank you for the question. So as Ms. Bukowski said, we have many projects that are going on campus as we speak. And I don't have the figure in my head. Maybe Denise has that with regard to the investment. But as I mentioned in my introductory remarks, the top CIP, capital improvement project request of the Board of Regents is for ADA projects. And we being the University of Nevada, Reno, have made the commitment if the legislature and the governor approve that CIP request, that we would use our share of those funds and commit 100% of UNR's share to ADA improvements on our campus. As Ms. Bukowski said, and I've mentioned in previous meetings, part of the challenge for us is that is the age of this campus. And one of the buildings that we've described, the first one on this campus, was built in 1885 and moving forward. So we are systematically improving access. I will tell you from a personal standpoint and members of my family, I understand this challenge, and my absolute number one priority here is to improve the accessibility here, and we will get that done. But it requires a lot of funds to do that. And as I said, we've dedicated as many funds as we can that we have available, but we are going to be sitting and presenting side by side with you all when it comes time to present the CIP request to the state legislature and the governor. Thank you very much, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, President Sandoval, as well as Ms. Mikowski. I really think we should try harder for the handicapped students and staff and people who visit, because we are eventually judged by how we treat the people who need our help the most in a society. Ms. Mikowski, I know it's not in your hands, but like the President said, we'll try our best to get more money for you. How's that, ma'am?
That would be a great plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Any other questions? Regent Brooks?
Thank you, Chair Scott. Regent Brooks, for the record. I just wanted to know, based on the information that you were providing to us, when you were talking about the timeline in relation to funding, if we just remove the funding part of it for a moment, in terms of timeline, what does that look like? What would be the timeline or a reasonable timeline?
Regent Brooks, Regent Arizcata, I think that would be difficult for me to answer right now. If there was unlimited funds and I were able to initiate all of these projects, and there's, you know, thousands of them identified, it would take several years to do the design, organize the construction. You know, you have certain facilities, it's difficult to take them out of service at any given time. Some things can't happen while other things are happening. So, you know, it's probably a decade if there were no constraints on money at all.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I'm just a little bit surprised to hear a decade because to Regent Boylan's point, right, if we were in a private sector, and I recognize that we're not, there would be infrastructure that would have to be ramped up very quickly for this type of compliance. Otherwise, the business or corporation itself would fall into some pretty substantial regulatory fines and other issues. But if I guess that's the timeline, then it would just leave more room for conversation to determine what is the priority then of the items that have to be renovated as quickly as possible to make sure that students have access to various buildings on the campus.
And Regent Arizcata, if I could clarify, the transition plan is the items identified there are, we are not out of compliance in terms of being fined. Our facilities meet the code under the building code that existed when they were constructed. But there's a recognition that some of them are behind the current code. And so you create a transition plan and then work towards making all of those items accessible. So our absolute commitment, priority, and effort is focused on getting those transition items done. But we also have the reality of being able to take facilities out of service. You can't have 100% of your sidewalks out of service at the same time. We have a full campus with full space utilization, and so trying to I was just trying to provide you with what I thought was a realistic answer for thousands of projects.
That makes perfect sense. I appreciate your time and the candor of the conversation. I think maybe for the board to take a look at is, yesterday we had passed at least the approval process for some of the budget concerns in terms of priority with the legislative body. But as I go back and take a look at it, there are certainly carved out areas for student, faculty, and staff, but I'm not so sure that there was something specifically put in there that references ADA. And if there was, it's fantastic, but maybe that's something that has to be revisited. Thank you. I appreciate your
And Regent,
President
Vice
Sandoval,
Chair,
please.
Ariscotta, to you and through you to Regent Brooks. There are two separate legislative requests. So one was a budget request. This other is a capital improvement, which you've already approved. And the number one priority for that was $50 million system-wide. And there is a formula by which, if that were successfully, if the legislature and the governor approve that request, then it would be disseminated based on that formula. The amount that the state gives to ENCHI is modest at best. I think it's a few million dollars. And if you added up the amount for all of our campuses, it probably would be $100 million plus, right, if not more. And as Ms. Bukowski said, we are in compliance. Obviously, the codes constantly change, and we aspire to improve that. For example, in the building where my office is, it was accessible, but it just wasn't good enough. And so we were able to get a project done within 6 months. And if you go there is a new ramp there that makes that building, it improves its accessibility dramatically. And that's what we are doing, is systematically identifying projects. So when you see, if you walk on campus a little ways from here, there's some chain link fences, and it's what Denise talked about, is better accessibility from the higher part of campus to the lower part of campus. But as she said, we have to be very strategic in terms of making sure that when we have that blocked off, there's another path for individuals with disabilities. But as I said, it is an absolute priority for us, and then when we do get the funding, those projects get done soon amount of time as it would in the private sector.
Yep. Regent Brooks, for the record, thank you, President Sandoval, because thanks for refreshing my memory, because we did go over this in I think the meeting beforehand weeks ago with our CFO, and I remember that specific conversation that we had regarding compliance issues. So thank you for reminding me, and I certainly thank you for all of your information.
Thank you, Regent Brooks and President Sandoval. Chair McAdoo?
I'm sorry I had to step out for a minute, but I want to make sure that we're clear that this is a situation across all of our campuses. That's why it was on our capital improvement project budget. So every one of our campuses can use a whole lot more funding to just update. So I just want to make that clear. It's not just a campus in need of that. Thank you.
And I'm actually going to try to, I'm not trying to be the one-upper, but it's not just on this campus that was built before a horse and buggy. It's not any of the newer campuses down in the south. You can look at Ivy schools. You can look at anything from north to south, east to west. The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law January of 1990. We're 32 years later, and we're still discussing it. Former Regent Sam Lieberman championed ongoing issues for years in regards to, throughout his tenure here as regent, with issues of accessibility. But with his passing, the onset of COVID and the turmoil of ENCHI, some of the issues that we've had throughout the years with funding, much of what happened and much of what Sam championed has disappeared. And we need to pick it up back up. If we want full inclusivity with everybody, with all, using the acronym in which we have bestowed upon this committee, we need inclusivity. Any other questions for Ms. Bukowski? With none stated, Denise, if you don't mind, just give me a minute, if you could, please. At the conclusion of... Oh, Denise, hold on. Don't go anywhere. Get back up here. I want to acknowledge Denise Buklowski's contributions to the university publicly at this meeting, which is going to be her last Board of Regents meeting before a very well-deserved retirement. Denise, I know you've been on the front line of some very challenging issues over the past 23 years of this campus, and not all of your trips to this board have been on topics that are positive as of today's, as like today's campus and as today's topic. But I want to acknowledge your unfailing dedications to the university. For those of you who don't know, Denise has masterfully led facilities department for the last several years and achieved impressive results. Under her leadership, hundreds of millions of dollars of new construction, one in which we are in today. Is that correct, Denise?
That's correct. This one was built actually before I was in charge, but thank you for the credit.
I'm sure you had a little bit of input, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. She is leaving the University of Nevada, Reno, much better than she found it. I also compliment you, Denise, on the great strides you've made in managing human capital over the Facility Services Department, creating and nurturing many career paths for our employees, and particularly those traditionally underrepresented in the construction disciplines. Denise was a key player in establishing a committee, the committee in which we just finished discussing, to review construction plans from a user perspective, which is what we are going to hear about and which we have heard about today and for the future. You are, without a doubt, one of the spearheads that has been finding campus accessibility. And if we have been stonewalled, people with disabilities have been stonewalled, you have been finding a way to chisel through that wall and to make an accessible route. And for that, I commend you and your 23 years of service.
Thank you, Regent Arascata. It's honestly been an honor to serve at the university. I really appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Enjoy retirement. Any other questions, comments? Let's move on to number five. Item number five on the agenda, the INSHE Northern Nevada Diversity Summit. Dr. Gordon Mora. Mike.
Yes, and I'm going to need a good morning. Thank you to Chair Perkins, Arascata, Regent Arascata, the Regents, the IDEA committee members, and my more than esteemed colleagues at the IDEA Council, to collaborators on the very difficult work of diversity, equity, inclusion. Thank you, President Sandoval and presidents. Today, I wanted to give you a very brief summary of the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit. I started with this slide pointing out that this summit broke all records of registration of any diversity summit, north or south, since it was first initiated in 2014. And I say this not as a self-congratulatory or competitive statement, but in order to underline the importance of the theme of the summit. The theme of the summit was work, study, life, family balances in higher education, advancing best practices in a post-pandemic world. And the theme was very much the result of very collaborative engagement with a cultural committee, cultural diversity committee that chooses the theme, and that committee has representatives, faculty, students, staff of all our northern institutions. And the theme very much speaks of the reality that is so much part of diversity work, of needing to look internally in our institutions. What are the life experiences of our very diverse community members and diverse within faculty, within students, within staff groupings, and the different sources of distress, of unwelcoming, that the pandemic just, among other things, brought to a higher understanding. The summit was also successful because of its keynote speakers that I will address shortly. And our student competition is always one of the highlights. This year, the three winners were Shanyi Sen, Hiding Behind My Mask, that very eloquently reminded us of the hatred against the Chinese community that was very much connected with the pandemic. She's a UNR School of Medicine student. Jocelyn Simmons, also from UNR, that spoke from her experiences as a trans woman and a non-traditional student in the sense that she's over 40, and what that those experiences and those diverse identities, since we all carry diverse identities, have meant to her. And finally, S. Lucille Purnell from TMCC, who spoke on the also very intense experience of being a COVID student that is starting her higher education in the year of COVID. We're particularly proud of the fact that, as all great human endeavors, it was a truly collaborative effort. And for this first time, we had co-chairs leading the efforts from not only UNR, but from TMCC. We had 46 outstanding presenters. And a shout out to all our collaborators within UNR that are listed there. Any effort of this magnitude involves a good number of units. We also are thanks to our many volunteers. And as you can see in the slide, the power of the theme of creating those balances was manifested in that we cannot speak simply of wellness as a generic notion, but we have to understand wellness from difference, wellness from a gender perspective, from a gender identity perspective, from sexual orientation, from what we are speaking now, ability needs, neurodiversity needs, race and ethnic issues that are so pervasive in our nation at this moment as challenges that we must address as higher education institutions. A shout out again to all my partners at the IDEA Council for helping us disseminate information. We had participants not simply from Nevada-wide, but from throughout the nation, and you can see the breakdowns that this year we also had. The summit was really a Nevada encounter. One of our keynote speakers was Dr. Shadi Malaklu, who's the founding director of the Bell Hooks Center in Berea College in Kentucky. We dedicated the summit to the memory and magnificent legacy of Bell Hooks' work that I'll share some comments later. We also had a very much needed stopping of talking and more like physical wellness presentation carried out by our great director of our fitness center, Sheena Harvey, that allowed all participants to take some time to take care of themselves. And finally, we had Professor Ed Morales from Columbia University and the CUNY Graduate Center that spoke on that notion that is so complicated of what is being a Latino, Latina, Latinx, Hispanic. We have to remember, all of us at NG that are HISI institutions, we at UNR that are so committed to becoming one soon, that Hispanic Latinx is a very complex notion. It's over 20 nations, multiple dialogues, languages, because not only Spanish is indigenous language, it's Portuguese, it's other languages. The same when we think of Asian, we use that category, which encompasses 40 nationalities just to begin with, and therefore the importance of something like this summit is distilling those understanding, disaggregating this understanding in order to be more effective and truthful. I said, and with this I'll close, that we dedicated the summit to the wonderful, magnificent work of Bell Hooks, who very unfortunately passed away on December, and so just a few months before the summit. And once somebody asked me, why are you dedicating the summit to Bell Hooks? And my answer is, she has been and will continue being one of the most powerful voices on so many issues, on a critical understanding of feminism, understanding racial, ethnic, social class issues, therefore intersectional issues. She has been a pioneer voice in critical cultural theory, but mostly she has been an educator. In here, I just give you a visual impact of her academic legacy, over 40 volumes of academic work. And importantly, as an educator, she introduced, among other things, the notion of higher education needing to be an act of freedom and an act of transgression. Higher education cannot be simply about receiving information and what's called banking for education, and an over-focus on being professional, very much needed. But also, as has been mentioned, we need to educate on democracy. And now that we are in the federal level discussions on the attack on January 6th, higher education has a principal role in re-strengthening our democratic coexistence. And for Bell Hooks, transgressing mean challenging, which any critical thinker has to do, racism, homophobia, ableism, and all forms of hate. Hate and silencing and untruth are the opposite of democracy. And that's what our summit was all about. And in here, if you have a chance, I very much invite you to hear the student presentations, the winners of the student competition that are still at our site. And I'll also give a plug to our next activity commemorating Juneteenth that will be available at our site, unr.edu/diversity, a fantastic conversation with three UNR colleagues. So I don't know if we have time for questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gordon. That was wonderful. Any questions from the committee? Any questions from Regents? Thank you, Dr. Gordon.
Thank you.
Gordon. We're going to move on to number six, an award presentation. If I may, Dr. Edid Fernandez, Vice President of Nevada State College, will present Estella Gutierrez, Vice President. Oops, excuse me. Will present a award presentation here in regards to numerous ongoing issues and success of individuals on our system. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, Dr. Edith Fernandez, in the absence of Jose Melendres, I was asked to present this award today because I'm a member of the IDEA Council, but also I am a board member of the American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education. So the presentation is for Estella Gutierrez. She is the Vice President of Student Services and Diversity at Truckee Meadows Community College. In 1992, Estella started her career at TMCC as a counselor. She was the first Latina to receive tenure at TMCC and has held multiple positions over the last 30 years. Growing up, she worked as a migrant farm worker with her parents. It is through the California Migrant Program that Estella discovered her passion for education. She believes education is the pathway to generational change. In 2010, she was elected as president of the Washoe County School District Board of Trustees. She became the first minority person to lead an elective entity in Washoe County. Gutierrez currently serves on the Northern Nevada Medical Center Board of Governors and the NASPA Latinx Task Force. In March of 2022, Estella received national recognition when she was awarded the prestigious National Ahi Community College Award by the American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education. I invite President Hilgerson to present the award today along with my IDEA colleagues. And Yvonne Allen, who is listening in on us. She's unable to be here, but is here in spirit. The IDEA Council presents to Estella this award. It reads, with grateful appreciation for your 30 years of service and national recognition as a diversity champion.
Let's put it here. And I can only add that Estella Gutierrez is one of the most amazing, amazing colleagues I've worked with. And TMCC would not be the same without her. So this award is so incredibly well deserved. Great job, Estella.
Thank you so much. Regent Perkins, I wish I could see you. Regent Arriscada, thank you so much. Thank you. But the reality is that there is no other place I'd rather be than TMCC here in Reno and in Nevada. 30 years is a lot, and I have to tell you, last night it just hit me, and I was just sharing this with you, President Sandoval, that's half of my life. Oh my gosh, half of my life. Ya me estoy siendo viejita. I am getting a little older, but I love what I do. I love what I do. So there's so much to say. So for those who know me, Jason, and those who've been with me all these years, I'm lost for words. And so I had to write something because I will be all over the place if I didn't. So I would have to say that I was very lucky to have found my purpose early on through the help of my migrant counselor, who empowered me and other migrant farm workers to pursue higher education. And all of us succeeded. In the last 30 years, much has happened at TMCC and with us in the system. We have faced challenges together. I can say that in the last decade, progress has been made in diversity and equity. But more has to be done. More has to be done in this area. As I reflect, I see our growth in stages. Perhaps the most difficult stage is the one we're living now. Now. And we'll confront together. I just got back from NCOR, which is the National Conversation of Race and Ethnicity, where I picked up this book for leaders in higher education that summarizes the now. We live in a challenging age. It is defined by anti-institutional rhetoric, a racial reckoning on a scale unknown in this nation's history, and a global pandemic that has sickened and killed millions while crippling economies. Serving as a leader during a time of such turmoil is difficult. It's a hard place. This is a challenge for us. Doing that work in a college or university setting is that much more challenging, given the unique characteristics of higher education. I believe our work will change. It will change. I believe that we will need to become ambassadors of hope and inspiration. We will need to take care of self more and others. But most importantly, we need to model integrity and wholeness. Esteemed IDEA members, your work becomes even more vital and critical. I have hope that you will help us lead in this next chapter, this next stage, and we're all with you. I want to publicly thank you, Vice Chancellor Brooks, for your dedication and your hard work. But most importantly, modeling hope and integrity. Thank you. Thank you to my TMCC familia for all of their hard work. Thank to all of you. And finally, but not least, thank you to my president, President Hilgerson, who puts up with me and supports me all the way. Thank you so much. Gracias.
Thank you. Three decades of service, you should have more than just one photo. So thank you very much. Let's continue. Item number 7, and new business from committee members. Done stated. However, I am going to make a quick statement in regards to a future new business. We, this Board of Regents, we have publicly made statements of full inclusivity. We have focused on the underserved and the underrepresented students to provide greater opportunities for all who have attend higher education. We, this Board of Regents, proudly recognize the cultural heritage of each proud graduate and their stole while walking across the stage of during graduation ceremonies. We, this Board of Regents, we recognize the flag in which each student and their family fully represents their heritage. But there is a constant population of underrepresented students, those with disabilities. The historically overlooked metric of those individuals is the underfunded technology. This cast of students with this underfunded technology, regardless of the civil rights action signed into law in July 26 of 1990, continue seeking full inclusion 32 years later. Hence, this system must address the issues of monetary shortfalls on each campus, responsible for stonewalling the complete inclusivity of each student, staff, and faculty member. And with that statement, public comment, please. Thank you much. Please state your name. Oh, I'm Paul. Excuse me right before. I'm new business. I apologize, Chair McAdoo. Did you have anything? Oh, please, public comment.
For the record, Dr. Edith Fernandez, Vice President at Nevada State College. I am the longest standing member of the Chancellor's Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access Council, IDEA, formerly known as the Chancellor's Edict Council. I have served on the IDEA Council under three chancellors. As a reminder, the Regents IDEA Committee is charged with recommending policies to the board to create, enhance, promote, and support an educational work environment that fosters inclusion, diversity, equity, and access for all students, faculty, staff, in collaboration with the Chancellor's IDEA Council. My public comment is on behalf of the IDEA Council, which has representation from each ENSHE institution. It is concerning to note a pattern of inaction and a lack of communication on a range of diversity, equity, and inclusion topics. Topics that representatives from all institutions have presented to the Regents IDEA Committee, which is very critical in advancing this DEI work. There's failed action on formalizing the Juneteenth resolution, failed action on the ENSHE anti-discrimination resolution, failed action on the ENSHE equity statement, failed action on the loan forgiveness for the permanently disabled, failed action on codifying the All Access Committee, and there is many more. I emphasize our disappointment in the disappearance of the ENSHE anti-discrimination resolution from today's Board of Regents agenda. The IDEA Council has done the work, but we are not being supported by the Regents IDEA Committee. The unresponsiveness, the inaction, suggests the Regents are not behind the work. This is a retrenchment on our efforts and is a grave disservice to students.
Thank you. Dr. Pollard?
Good morning. For the record, Darian Pollard, President of Nevada State College. I'm grateful and very much happy to have heard this morning from Regent Arascada that an inclusive process is being engaged in to craft the anti-discrimination statement. So I want to be very clear to emphasize that the need for progress in advancing the statement is necessary in this moment. There are many within the NCHI community who are pained and concerned by the absence of this product. And one unintended consequence of that is one interpretation of inaction that can also be led to one of attentional silencing. We must reconcile who we claim to be with who we really are and who we hope to become. The anti-discrimination resolution is a necessary statement of radical inclusion, our willingness to acknowledge opportunities for growth and the need for justice ourselves, to publicly declare and embrace our mutuality with all of the communities and the ideals by which this work of this committee describes its commitments to. As I've said in other spaces, we need a notion of radical inclusion that is omnipresent, a deep-seated and profound recognition that inclusion and equity cannot exist in the absence of justice, empathy, compassion, and truth. This moment, I think, is not about high rhetoric, wrapping benign platitudes in gratuitous sentimentality or blatant obfuscation. It is about the deep and sometimes painful work of truth-telling, reconciliation, and community building. Justice and truth are always preconditions for peace and compassion. I look forward to the forthcoming statement of anti-discrimination as a public explication of the system, the Board of Regents, our member institutions, our authentic commitments to diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Pollard. Please.
My name is Larry Daly, Professor Emeritus at University of Nevada. Did you know that UNR thinks NCHI code tells them that complaints of possible wrongdoing by the UNR Equity Equal Opportunity and Title IX Office are to be filed with the Equal Opportunity and Title IX Office? And if you think the president is discriminating, you can file to that office that reports to the president or to the president. So possibly harmed parties who may be traumatized are to request investigations from the alleged offenders. The alleged offenders receive the complaints of their own possible wrongdoing, read the complaints, and decide who will investigate the complaints of their own behaviors before any neutral investigator is assigned. And it's even likely that one of the alleged offenders will make the final decision. Isn't this unfair? Isn't it in a conflict of interest? Is it ethical? The NCHI code mandates fairness and forbids conflicts of interest. In January, I witnessed an associate dean of diversity and inclusion, of all things, deliberately delaying agreed-upon reasonable accommodations for a student with disabilities. This seemed wrong, so I filed a complaint on the student's behalf in January and again in February. UNR's Equal Opportunity Office has still not started the investigation. The apparently harmed student finished college a week ago yesterday. Remember, NCHI requires prompt and fair investigations of any discrimination report. When we found out our complaint had not been investigated, I tried to file a report with the president's office and the EEO office. Now let's be clear. Issues like I was told to go to the alleged perpetrators. I didn't do it because it's wrong. Let's be clear, these type of issues aren't restricted to UNR. I was told by a state worker yesterday that they are dissuading people with certain hidden disabilities from going to TMCC because of the lack of support for ADA. And the student told me it's worse at TMCC, too. The student went there. To improve this system, this committee will need to uncover and fix stuff that has been hidden for a long time. There's not much incentive for officials to report their own blemishes. What are they not telling you? True diversity is more than awards, celebrations, and building changes, which is most of what I've seen today. It is empathizing with people you do not understand, meeting with people that make you nervous, and uncovering needs. It's taking the risk to help. Please change this system.
Okay, perfect. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dawson Deal, last name spelled D-E-A-L for the record. I'm an undergraduate student at the University of Nevada, Reno, studying political science, and I'm a representative of our student body, serving as the advocacy director for the Department of Government Affairs of the Associated Students of the University of Nevada. I'm here today to advocate for areas of UNR's contribution to NSHE's 2023-25 biennial budget proposal. This budget proposal contains funding that is critical to specific programs that help improve student life and the experience of students at our university and other institutions across the state. First, as Nevada ranks as the third highest state for the most food insecure children, and as the UNR Food Pantry PAC Provisions Program has seen a 5,000% increase in visits since 2016, it is crucial that food programs continue so our students have access to safe, abundant, and nutritious food supply. Second, as we strive to be a more inclusive and accessible university to all who step foot on campus, improvement of ADA adherence is so important for many students. The approximately $10.5 million proposed for ADA infrastructure improvement by UNR will no doubt improve student life and is a top priority. Third, while UNR's Dean Future Students Scholars programs, equipping lower-income first-generation students with the knowledge, skills, and support in order for them to become responsible and productive citizens, must continue to be a successful program. Nevadans deserve the best outcomes for their annual $1 billion-plus investment into this system that affects the current and future lives of tens of thousands of students, faculty, families, and our state economy. NSHE has the task of overseeing this annual budget, and I want to emphasize that these dollars are not just numbers on a spreadsheet. The institutions that receive this funding are so essential to the development of the economy and workforce throughout Nevada. How much funding is received and how the funds are spent are things that we should all deeply care about. Every dollar of this budget spent is an investment into our students and into their future. So we must ensure we are working to provide improved student life on campus while providing opportunities for development and increasing accessibility to higher education for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Edwin Lingar, for the record. I have just finished my first year as a full-time instructor at TMCC. It was delightful. But I'm here today to advocate on behalf of part-time faculty. I taught first in 2006 at TMCC, and I've been a part-time faculty on and off ever since. 5 years ago, I left my job to start my second career in teaching for all the reasons that you would probably expect. You know, I wanted to do it. It meant a lot to me. I have learned a lot about what's going on in part-time faculty, and I would say the teachers are not all right. There is a current proposal. I have not followed the latest developments on it to raise the pay of certain graduate students who teach at universities. I would urge and argue strenuously that any increase in pay for any part-time teachers affect everyone across the system. Right now, the current state of pay, I'm going to lay out some dollars, $850 a credit at TMCC. That amounts to, and I teach English, but I still did the math, $15,300 for an annual salary. It has reached the level of being a little preposterous to have this kind of low salary. TMCC has done some things I think are very good for part-time faculty. I am saying there is good news, but the salary remains the key sticking point. We did a survey. I am on the part-time faculty committee. That was my big first assignment. Really enjoyed it. We did a survey of the part-time faculty, and upwards of 50% of part-time faculty depend on this money to survive. We cannot balance the books at NSHE on the backs of adjunct faculty. This is a national problem. Nevada is particularly bad at it. So please It's a lovely building. It's lovely faculty. You know, everything is so great. Let's bring some of these resources to bear for our least paid faculty. Thank you.
Is there any additional public comment? None seen. We are going to adjourn this meeting.
Thank you, Regent Arascada.
Las Vegas? No. I was
there is none.
Sorry, ma'am.
Are we now adjourned?
We are adjourned. Thank you.